If the game of baseball has produced an odder specimen than Bill Lee, we haven't met him. He was the long-haired left-handed pitcher for the Boston Red Sox and the Montreal Expos in the 70s and 80s. He won 119 games and pitched in the World Series. But he's better known for a host of other achievements and offenses, like admitting to marijuana use as a player, wearing a gas mask to batting practice to protest pollution, calling manager Don Zimmer the gerbil, and running for president on a party whose platform included lowering the boiling point of water. He earned the nickname the Spaceman in the 70s, and it stuck. Lee has a new book with writer Richard Lally about his life after Major League Baseball called Have Glove, Will Travel. In it, Lee explains how he's managed to keep playing for the past 20 years in minor leagues, charity games, senior leagues, and traveling road shows. The journey has taken him throughout the United States, as well as to Canada, Venezuela, Russia, and Cuba. At age 58, Bill Lee is still throwing trick pitches and making mischief on and off the field. One of the things that you tell us in this book is that, I mean, you were a guy who never believed in a no-alcohol, no-drugs training regimen. You enjoyed your time in baseball. And one of the things I found interesting was you said that you often pitched better with a hangover. Why?
Yes. I learned that from Marichal. Marichal always said whenever he was hurt, flawed.
Let me just interrupt and remind our we're talking about Juan Marichal, the great.
Juan Marichal. Yeah. You're right. He's the great, the Dominican dandy. And he and I are still close. And I remembered him going out against Drysdale and against Koufax. And he would be sore and he'd be cranky and his windup would be flawed. And, you know, he'd give up a lot of long foul ball home runs. And then next thing you know, he'd just all of a sudden he'd turn it around. And he had pinpoint control. And, you know, he always told me you pitch a lot better, a little better when you're a little hurt and you're a little lame. And I remember the Indians, they always, lame beaver was always a very good distinction. A three-legged beaver is tougher than a four-legged beaver.
Now, why do you pitch better if you're hungover or a little impaired?
I think you don't make mistakes. You realize that you're a little hurt and you can't afford to get cocky. You can't afford to let your ego take over. You've got to make pinpoint pitches. You have to really read the hitter better and know when to subtract and when to come inside. And you just seem to dance better. And it's kind of a – pitching is a sobering thing. I think as you get into the third or fourth inning, all of a sudden you're running on what you call it's a Zen quality where it's Zen mind, beginner's mind. All of a sudden you're throwing the ball even before you release it, and everything seems to fall into place. And I could always get into that state for some reason, and people couldn't believe that I could do what I did with as little as I had. And I think that's a credit that. And I've always tried to be a minimalist, and I think I did that when I pitched.
Well, the remarkable thing about that is that a pitcher isn't just playing catch. If he's got runners on base, he has to keep track of each of them. He knows the strengths and weaknesses of the hitters that are against him. The runners on base, he's communicating with a catcher about the selection of the pitch and its location. How is that Zen? How is that minimalist? That's a lot to keep track of.
Wow, you don't think about that. My coach said, Tiger, don't think out there. Cut your head off. Let your body do the work. I'll do all the thinking. And I think we take it to a level of, I call it a parasympathetic level, where we don't use our head. It's kind of our eyes to our spinal cord, to our fingertips, to our feet. And it's kind of a dance that we get into. And I get into a cardiovascular nature as I work fast. I used to work fast. It'd drive hitters crazy. You know, Cotton, I, and some of the good ones that could pitch would control the tempo of a game and get to the end result a lot faster. Hitters would step out on me, and if they stepped out on me, I'd throw at them. You know, I said, get back in the box. You know, I don't intimidate anyone with my fastball, but I would throw it right at their skull and tell them, hey, look, they're not here to see you step in and out of the batter's box. Hargrove hated me, and Fisk, my catcher, was a notorious malingerer too, and so I tried to get him to speed up the tempo of the game. And umpires like that. Most umpires, you know, when I got to the National League, they questioned me initially and wanted to see my resolve. But when I didn't complain, when they'd make a bad call, they realized that, we weren't out there to watch them umpire or to watch me pitch. They were out there to watch a ball game and see how it unfolded.
The interesting thing about hearing you describe this sort of cutting your head off, sort of forgetting about all that and just pitching is that I think I am fascinated by your descriptions in this book of the mechanics of pitching and of baseball. I mean, the precision and kind of poetry of what works and what doesn't. For example, when you said how one game in Venezuela you were trying to impress somebody and throw too hard, and what you discovered was that in doing that, you were coming down too quickly, screwing up your release point, and so the pitches didn't have the dip that they needed to have, the snap. So while you don't think about it, you certainly analyze it in an interesting way.
Well, Lally does.
That's your Richard Lally, your collaborator.
Richard, he's a pitcher wannabe, likes to be an athlete, and a great guy. He and I are, he's a Yankee fan, I'm a Red Sox fan. We've hooked up. Back in the old days when I wrote The Wrong Stuff, he came to me with a proposal, and I'll tell you, that was a great marriage made in heaven because we both played off of one another. I called it kind of like educating Richard, you know, and I do know. My theory is if I'm backing up third base, I did something wrong. You know, or give the hitter credit that he hit the ball in the gap, made a good pitch, and he went the other way, drove it in the right center field gap, and now I've got to go over and cover third base because he's going to be coming around second into third. But I'll tell you something, as far as analyzing it down to that minutia, I know that if I'm a little high, I overstride it, shorten your stride. Right. Everything's like tempo. It's the tempo of a golf swing. It's not how hard you swing. Sam Snead, nice, smooth tempo. Bobby Jones, you know, all of them. It wasn't until Palmer started swinging out of his ass that guys started trying to knock the ball down the fairway. And then you had Jack Nicklaus that came out there, and he was a walking rain delay. He used to drive me crazy, and I couldn't stand him. I love Julius Boros. I like guys that got up there, read the line, knocked the putt, walked up there. If they didn't make it, so be it. You know, they never agonized over things like Nicklaus was a It's agony and the ecstasy. And,
so it's letting the flow of the game happen, staying in rhythm.
Letting the flow of the game happen and having a tempo. That's why I love old-time baseball. I love watching the older games and the guys with the full windups. And these guys are out there, and they play baseball. They never pulled muscles. They never had weight machines. They never did stretching or anything else. They played pepper. They chewed tobacco, and they went out and played baseball. And they had a good time, and the game was over, and they went out and had a couple of brews. Went home and did it again. Now you get your Halliburton, you go out with your cell phone, you talk to your agent, and you go do a couple of commercials, and you do this and that. And I'm going, why would the American public want to know what a ball player ate or what a ball player did? And that's our society that we've created.
Let's talk about the modern game a little bit. I mean, the big controversy now is steroids. There's a lot of controversy because some people think those who take steroids cheated. Did you ever cheat as a ball player, like put sandpaper in your glove or an emery board to play tricks on the ball?
Every chance I could get. Yeah, I tell you, they eliminated, you couldn't chew Slippery Elm anymore, and that was a lot of spitballers threw.
Explain, is that a brand of tobacco?
Slippery Elm is a throat lozenge that's got elm in it that's highly slippery, and it increases your saliva flow so you can lick your fingers when you're dry at the seventh inning of a ball game and put a foreign substance on the top of the ball. So when you release it, you put a little pine tar on your thumb, first of all, to get more tension on the bottom of the ball and more friction, and then you put Slippery Elm on the top, and then you have a tumbling fastball that you just can't flat out hit. Man, if you can make the ball go down and you can only hit the top half of the ball, first of all, you don't need any outfielders. You can take them and just put them on the bench because it's going to be all infield play, and hitters are going to have to make an adjustment. Most hitters are dumber in the post, so they'll never make that adjustment. So the game's going to be 2-1. And I love sinkers. I love spitballs. I love anything that'll make the ball go downward.
Well, what about those? Then is it okay if hitters cork their bats? And I mean,
oh sure. You know, when you see hitters having to do stuff, it means they're hungover, their bats slowed down, they're starting to worry about things. When guys start corking their bats, it's the beginning of the end, and it's a symptom that they can't hit, and that's why Sosa is not in Chicago anymore. They feel that he's, you know, they're sending him down for the last time and stuff, and I love it when hitters start having to do things or go to a lighter bat because they're getting jammed, and we know that. Pitchers, there's a grapevine out there, and we find out when someone can't hit it, don't worry, it's on the web.
So do you think the league should even have any of these rules, or is it a matter of, well, if you get caught, fair enough?
Heck, they shouldn't. Those rules, the umpires never did it. Gaylord Perry, you couldn't, every ball they threw into the umpire, he couldn't even catch it. It squirted up in his hand like a banana, you know, and they never threw him out of the ball game, and he's in the Hall of Fame. You look at Cap Anson, who was a big racist and everything else, and Ty Cobb, another big racist, and you look at all these people in the Hall of Fame, put them all in the Hall of Fame. They're all crooks.
Well, one more thing about the modern game. I mean, when you played, salaries weren't anything like they are now, and you've got, you know, a system that a lot of people think allows the big market teams like the Yankees to just really compete unfairly, to buy players. Do you think that's unfair? I mean, should the game have rules that make the competition fairer among the different teams?
Well, that's called the National Football League.
Right.
And they have a weak union, and they have a strong ownership group, and they control everything, and every Sunday they put a good product out there on the field, and you know, that's football. And football is the Monroe Doctrine, where we expansionism from coast to coast and we take care of everything and it's all run on a clock, which I really hate. But baseball it's timeless. It goes out. You play it on in beautiful fields when the grass turns green. You don't play it when it rains. It's a civilized game without a clock, and it is, you know, it's our economic system. I'm a anarchist, a socialist. I'm the only communist ever to pitch in the big leagues. And I think that's the whole nature of what we do. Gosh, it drives me nuts.
And it costs $85 to buy an infield ticket at Fenway Park nowadays. I mean, are you disenchanted, or do you still love to watch Major League Baseball?
Oh, gosh, I love baseball. I don't care what level it's played on. I would rather watch a bunch of Cubans for 10 centavos down in Havana smoking a beautiful Cohiba that was hand-rolled by a gentleman right there at the ballpark, drinking a cerveza that cost a nickel, and watching the ball game there for eternity. I would rather go to Cuba and watch a game than watch a game anywhere else.
My guest is Bill Lee. He was a big league pitcher for the Boston Red Sox and the Montreal Expos. His new book is called Have Glove, Will Travel. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. We're back with Bill Lee. He is a former big league ball player. His new book about his life after Major League Baseball is called Have Glove, Will Travel. You wrote that Vermont saved your life. Why?
Yeah, well, it did. It took me away from a bar in Vermont, and it took me away from a bar in Montreal. I call my house a halfway house. It's halfway between those two bars. And the funny thing is, I'm a gregarious drinker. I'm not a closet drinker. I'm not the kind of guy that sits around and drinks when there's not a party happening. It's only in my house, there's hardly a party, so I'm pretty sober most of the time.
There's a moment in the book where you are, someone's trying to convert you to religion, and you recognize that he's a reformed drinker, you think. And you write, addicts must replace their addiction with other opiates, be it smoking, bodybuilding, cyber cruising, game shows, gambling, raw sex, anything that can substitute for their habit. So they never truly lose their compulsions. They simply take up more benign ones, like playing baseball 250 days a year. That's obviously you. Is there an addiction you're running from?
Oh, God, no. Not anymore. All of them are the same. I mean, I'm not fearful of anything. You know, the greatest line I think I had, they asked about mandatory drug testing. And I said, you know, I tested them all in the 80s, and I don't think it should be mandatory.
You've tested all of them, right?
Yeah.
You finish the book by talking about your family, your dad, and the way baseball has an enduring appeal and something that's brought you all together and that you've enjoyed together. I mean, you have generations on the diamond. You play father and son games.
Yeah.
Would you want to read a little bit of
I'll just tell you a story.
Tell me a story.
It might not even be in the book. We're playing in the father-son games down in Arizona, and I've got my son Michael hitting behind me and Andy hitting in front of me, and we're down two runs, and I got two men on base, and I fight off this young college pitcher, and he breaking ball, fastball in, jams me. He hangs a slider and hit a baseball right by his ear, a bullet up the middle, and tie up the ball game. I'm at first base. Now my son Michael gets up. My dad's right behind there. This is the 18th inning of a doubleheader in 100-degree heat. Well, it wasn't that hot. It was about 82. And he's standing there with his little hat on, chewing tobacco behind home plate. And Andy, I've had a slight hamstring pull, my right hamstring, because I played a lot of ball and I was beat up pretty bad. And Michael hits the first pitch over the right fielder's head. I think it's a home run, but it's a top spinner, and it's coming back into the park, and it hits right at the base of the fence. I'm off at the crack of the bat because there's two outs. I hit second, and I'm dragging my right leg around, and I hit third, and I'm going to score the winning run, and we're going to go to the championship. And I hit home plate with a winning run. My son gets thrown out at third before I touch home plate, and the run doesn't count, and we end up losing. And I go to my dad, and he's standing behind the screen, and I'm going, "Dad, Dad, I was running as hard as I could. I was running as hard as I could, honest." And he looks at me and goes, "Yeah, son, in one place." Spits his tobacco juice down on my foot, exactly like Dirty Harry and what was that? One of those Clint Eastwood movies.
Right.
Boy, it was a meaningful thing. "Yeah, son, you were running as fast as you can, but in one place." And that's it. That's it. You know, we're a tough family, and that's what keeps us going. And I think that that's life. You got to be tough and strong and weather the storm. And that's my father's 84. He's about a 14 handicap, shoots his age all the time, and spits tobacco juice on your shoe and you take it.
But, you know, I think a lot of Little League dads would say that when my kid goes around the bases and he tries to score, does his best, gives it all he has, and then he doesn't score because a runner's thrown out behind him.
Yeah,
you don't insult him. You say, "Great job. You know, you did the best you could do."
That's what's wrong with our society.
That's what's wrong.
We're so much looking for super gratification and praise. Baseball's a game of failure. Baseball's a game of getting out there and only succeeding some of the time. And that's we give this. I call it gratuitous handshaking and high-fiving. You miss a free throw now, and a guy comes down and shakes your hand in the middle of an NBA game and gives you a high five. And that's it. You got Moss doing all his stuff, answering his cell phone, or one of the guys, and all these guys. Premature celebrating is what's wrong with the sport in America. We got way too much premature celebrating out there, and we got to put an end to it. And that's the whole thing. My dad pointed out to me, it was funny. It's kind of a, he wasn't insulting me. He was just making a statement that was just kind of a double-edged sword, and you've got to take it. That's the problem with us out there. We've model-collied our kids and everything else, I think, way too much, instead of showing them the reality of failure.
Well, Bill Lee, may your slider never lose its snap. Thanks for talking with us.
Oh, my pleasure. Never had a slider.
You never had a slider?
No, overhand deuce. I had a cut fastball, and I had a slurve, but sliders are fastball pitchers have sliders. I'm a junker. What I had, I have a changeup that you can't hit to this day, and if I ever get a chance to play against you, we got to tell you, if you don't like softball, play hardball. You only have to play once a week, and you get all the satisfaction you need.
I find my way to Vermont occasionally. Maybe we'll do that. Thanks so much.
Take care.
Former Major League junk ball pitcher Bill Lee. His new book about playing baseball after leaving the big leagues is called Have Glove, Will Travel.